Hello, this is Matt. Welcome to another episode of Box of Cameras. Hope that you're having a great weekend. Been a little cold and chilly here in central Iowa. Blowing rain. Got a good amount of rain overnight or Saturday night. I guess it was last night. I guess it was actually Friday night. Nice, cold, blowy, you know, like spring should be. The thing is, here in central Iowa, we usually don't have much of a spring. It usually lasts for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then it's gone. You know, we go pretty much winter, a couple weeks of spring, and then, summer. But we're not like that this year. Looks like we got an actual decent long spring here. So that's cool. Really looking forward to some nicer weather, but hey, that's great. Couple things here. Number one, today is Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day. Got out and shot a roll through the wide pinhole Hoga, and that was fun. So sorry about that. So, you know, we got out there and, I got out there and enjoyed spending some time in the cold, blowy, gray day to get out there and spread the word and do a little pinhole love. So anyways, we'll see what happens there. I'm going to get that developed here over tonight or tomorrow. Well, it won't be tonight. I'm going to be busy this evening. But maybe this week I'll get that developed so I can get it scanned and posted. Shot some Tri-X, and looking forward to seeing the results on that. Let's see, a couple other things happening. The plan for my show is I just wanted to talk about shooting some low ISO film. But before I hop in there, I did want to say, you know, awful saddened by hearing the news of the passing of Carl Havens, a member of the Classic Lenses Facebook group, or I should say Classic Lenses podcast. I only knew the guy from the podcast, never corresponded with him or anybody else over there, but I thoroughly enjoyed him on that show. He really brought a lot of life, a certain type of humor that I always appreciated. I always loved the fact that, you know, they'd be sitting here talking about a lens and he'd be on eBay buying one, and that just always made me laugh. Really saddened for his family and saddened for everybody else that has come across his life over the many years he's been out there in the world. And, you know, just I read some stuff on Facebook. He seemed to be a pretty incredible man, young guy, youngish, my age, and awful saddened to hear of his passing. So my condolences to him and everybody else that is saddened by his loss. So I'm going to move on from there. Yeah, how do you transition from that? But, you know, I did want to speak specifically about something that I've been doing quite a bit of here, really, not even just recently, but over the last couple of years. And that's shooting low ISO rated film. You know, you acquire film, you deal with shooting what you've got, when you got, but you know, most of the film that we buy as consumers isn't, is specifically made for consumers. It's made to be able to express or capture the light, especially with film. The different films are made to capture light under certain circumstances. So, you know, the things like, brighter sunshine, you can use one kind of film, and in lower light, you use a different kind of film, and all that. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of education about, ISO, which is our current system. I'm trying to think of what it stands for. I think it's International Standard Organization for Standardization, something like that. But it's really an international method to make it so that anybody that manufactures film, when they say that the film is rated to be exposed in a certain amount of light, it's all the same. So consequently, you know, when you buy some film from Kodak or Ilford or Fuji and it says it's rated at 100 ISO, that means it's been made to develop at a certain amount of light. It's sensitive to certain types of, I should say types of light, but the certain brightness of light. In general, the more light, the easier it is to expose film. So you just kind of always have to, you kind of can judge and use and decide upon different types of film based upon the lighting circumstances that you're plan on encountering. Consequently, if you've got film that's rated for a certain type of light, a brightness, you know, let's say you're rated for the outdoors and you wind up with gray, cloudy, overcast, or almost nighttime scenes, that that ISO rated film is probably not well suited for that job, or more than likely it's probably suited, but you're going to have to do some different things to make it work for you. And that's really what I wanted to talk about today. So I'm going to get my notes in order here. No, I don't really have notes, but I just want to gather my thoughts here before I record this next segment. And we'll dig deep into shooting low ISO film. Okay, so we're shooting low ISO film. And by that we mean the number that's been assigned to ISO. Whatever that is, the lower the number, the more light is needed to expose your scene. Generally, most commercially available films, really, the stuff that you can buy off the shelf for photography, you're really looking at Kodak Vision 50D for color and Ilford Pan-F Plus. Those are about the two lowest for currently commercially available low ISO films. And I guess, you know, Fuji Velvia might be in there. But that's about it for commercially available, at least I'll say available to the consumer. You could possibly find older and expired films that maybe were different, rated a little bit lower. But that's pretty common what you're going to see if you went to a store and tried to buy some, or went online and tried to buy some fresh film. That's pretty much what you're looking at. Now, the advantage of lower ISO films, it's generally you get truer colors in the daytime and usually much finer grain, you know, especially once you start getting into some of the weirder films that I'm going to be talking about later. But you get some finer grain, a little bit truer colors. One of the trade-offs is they can be a little contrasty as well, which is fine if you're shooting color because it really lets the color shine through. But if you're shooting black and white, that Pan-F Plus can get contrasty, but that can be handled in development as well. So you just kind of have to watch what you're doing and realize that, yes, you need plenty of light to expose it, but the more light that you use to expose it, the more contrasty and washed out eventually that it becomes. Whereas, you know, if you're shooting, say, your standard 400 ISO film, think Tri-X 400, HP5, you know, Fuji Superior 400, Superior 400. Those are pretty much your standard films. I think that's what most people would probably judge most films against. You know, your T-Max, that type of thing. Pretty standard, wide-ranging availability to use. I mean, you can use that out in the sunshine. And it also allows you to use it in a little bit darker conditions, even indoors, sometimes without a flash. And that's really what the 400 speed film does for you. Now, from there it goes up. You know, you can get, Delta 3200, Kodak P3200, those type of films that allow you to shoot ISO of 1000 or even higher. You know, and then once you get up into those speeds, you're talking about pushing and pulling, and I'm not going to go into that. I'm talking about box speed at this point, okay? So that's just it in a nutshell. The lower the ISO, the more light is needed to expose it, or the longer it needs to be exposed, versus high ISO film, which doesn't need as much light, but can also give you some really short shutter speeds, which allows you to maybe go inside and shoot a concert or something like that. Those are the advantages. Now, I'm going to talk specifically about shooting low ISO film. The thing is you can find film that's much, much lower ISO than 50. And I've recently come into quite a bit of different kinds of films that are either older and expired or were initially rated low ISO anyways. And they may still be expired, but you know. And then also I've got some fresh film that's low ISO films. And the reason that I've come into these is bought them off of eBay, and they're used for specific purposes, and these films are generally not available to the consumer as a film photography, a handheld photography thing. They're usually cinema films that people either make available or that you buy in bulk, which is what I did. One of the films I'm going to talk about a little bit more extensively, and that's simply because it's something that's you can occasionally find it for sale, but not like from Kodak and packaged by Kodak, but this would be Kodak separation film. The number on that is 2238. It's made specifically for preserving motion pictures and making what they call separation copies. And what they do is they take the print and they shine light through filters, red, blue, and green filters, I believe, and they shine them onto this black and white film, and then they're able to combine them to capture the colors as well as the underlying image. And the thing is the film itself is made to capture and preserve, and the film itself will last for 500 years is what it's rated for. It really is, in terms of preserving films, preserving anything like that, it's really the best method out there. It's better than digital storage. We all know digital is ones and zeros, and it's just dependent upon software. Software changes. Think of all the different formats that are out there. Think of all these, if you've been shooting any kind of digital cameras for any amount of time, but really if you've been shooting them for, say, 15 years or so, you already know that you have pictures that are saved on floppy disks. You can't view anymore. You got pictures that are viewed on CDs, but they're stored in file formats that are no longer valid, and you can't view those anymore. So instead of films, motion picture films being stored that way, they actually put them on this separation film. And you can certainly Google and find out a lot of information about it. It's pretty fascinating stuff. Now the thing is this film that Kodak makes, this panchromatic separation film, 2238. Doesn't really have an ISO associated with it, like a consumer ISO, because the film's not made for that purpose. It's made to run through. It's exposed with really bright lights, but it's really there to capture these individual frames. The thing about this film is it is extremely fine grained. I mean, that's what's, you know, if you're going to be copying something, you need to have something as accurate as possible. So the fine grain nature of this film makes it perfect for that. The other thing is since it's made for that purpose, It's made to be developed in specific chemistry that is designed for the film. So this Kodak Panchromatic 2238 is made to be developed in film developer known as Kodak D96. Now D96, I've done some research, and I'll do another episode about that in the future here. But D96 is similar to D76, but just the manner in which it's made to be developed, the developing times and whatnot, it's specifically made to be used in that. So consequently, there's no information about how you develop this in other developers. Kodak never tested it, or if they did, they never made it public. So it's really not out there since it's not made for consumer use. It's not really developed or tested for consumer products and consumer methods. So how do you get this stuff? Well, here's what happened to me. Okay, eBay, right? I'm on eBay. I'm always looking for deals on bulk film. That's what I do. And this stuff is made, and it comes in 400-foot rolls as the smallest, on up to 1,000-foot rolls, because it's used in motion picture industry. Short rolls aren't really all that important. So I saw a listing. I put in a bid at next to nothing, and I ended up with 400 feet of this film, and I probably paid $25 for it, with shipping included. I mean, it was just ungodly cheap. And hey, that is me. If you should know by now, Matt is ungodly cheap. You can ask Mrs. Melcher, and she will tell you the same thing. So I got all this film, and I'd seen some stuff. I mean, it's out there. You've seen, you can Google it and look in Flickr, and you'll find all kinds of stuff about this particular film, about it being extremely fine-grained and having the ability to be used in regular 35 millimeter motion picture cameras. And you can also re-spool it onto your regular standard 35 millimeter cassette and put in your film camera. You have to do a little bit of work, break it down from a 400-foot roll to a 100-foot roll so that you can then put it in your bulk loader and roll and get yourself several rolls. And that's what I did. And the thing about it, though, is that it is a very low ISO. It's not even really rated. So when you see it available, there's been a couple places that have re-spooled it commercially, and they rate it anywhere from 6 to 25 and up to 50. So that's pretty wide. For me, I did a little bit of testing, and 25 to 6 is pretty much what I like. Now, 25 to 6 is doable on most decent, on almost all really kind of decent 35 millimeter cameras. Now, I'm not going to talk about point and shoots because, well, we'll back up here. It has to be on a camera that you can alter the ISO on. If you have a type of camera, say like a Pentax P3 that reads and picks the ISO from the film canister, that camera's not going to work for you. That's a lot of your newer or later model cameras, your point and shoots, as well as a lot of 35 millimeter, a lot of stuff towards the end of the 35 millimeter run for camera manufacturers. A lot of those did not allow you to change the ISO. And for me, like nowadays, if I go and buy a camera, I won't buy it if I can't change the ISO on it. Now, most of your manual cameras, I'm just going to grab one from the pile here. Okay, I have a Minolta XE7, and I can change the ASA. It's what it says here, ASA, which is the same as ISO. Okay, technically there's some slight differences, but it acts the same, so I'm not going to go into that. This camera allows me to rate a film down to 12 ISO. And which is great. It has a little bit of an auto feature, so it can take that ISO rating and use the camera exposure to determine the shutter speed. It's basically aperture priority. which is cool. So that's what I look for. I look for a camera that allows me to do that. Now, a lot of the older cameras, you could take films down to 6 ISO. You don't see that very often. 20, 25 is usually about as low as they go. I've seen some that are 32. 12 is not necessarily uncommon, like old Pentax Spotmatic. I think I've got one of those nearby. So let's see what this says. No. What is this? Oh, yeah, there it is. Never mind. I have to remember how to use it. Let's see. Yeah, I've got a K1000. It goes down to 20, which means that you can use a film that, you know, ideally, if you got a film that's rated at somewhere around 20, 25, you can use it. And the meter, when you look through it, is going to be telling you when you're overexposed and whatnot, which is cool. But what if you have a film that's rated even lower? Say like 6. Like I said, this film that I'm talking about, I like to shoot it at about 6. What about if you got something that's say 1? You know, 0.5. I've seen some of those as well too. How do you go about shooting those? Well, let's talk about that. How do you shoot film that has the ISO rated lower than the lowest setting on your camera? You know, I've got the K1000, it goes down to 20. But what if the film stock I've got is rated at 6? How do you shoot that? It's not difficult. It's actually pretty easy, but you have to have a bit of an understanding about stops, what we mean when we say open it up 2 stops. That you have to have an understanding of that. So basically, what happens is you set your ISO at 25. That's as low as your camera goes. You meter for 25. And it says you need to set your shutter speed at 125 and your aperture at 4. Okay. So then you need to open your stops. You need to open your camera up 2 more stops. You got a couple different ways you can do that. But the primary way that people do that is with the aperture ring. So if you're sitting here and you're set at an aperture of 4, you need to open that up 2 more stops, which would be like on this camera here, 2.8, which is half of the 4. At least that's the rated. Don't go by math. Go by how the science is rating the numbers and providing you the numbers for photography. Then after that, you're going to go down to roughly less than 1 in this camera here. The lens I've got is 1.17, 1 to 1.7 lens. So that's my 2 stops. Basically, I take it from 4 and I open it up all the way and I take a shot. And that's going to give me the proper exposure for 6 ISO film shot on a camera that goes down to, say, 20 or 25. There's other ways you can do that. You know, maybe if you meter for it and it says that you're supposed to have a shutter speed of, say, 125, and you're supposed to open it up 2 stops, you can change your shutter speed to 30. So 1 stop would be 60, next one would be 30. So it's that combination between aperture and shutter speed that's going to get you where you need to go. Each one of those has its own drawbacks, I will say. For shutter speed, you know, once you start lowering that shutter speed, your ability to handhold is really greatly reduced. So if you're on a tripod, you know, that's really going to be beneficial for you to keep that camera still. You know, once you get down below 60, 30 can be difficult for a lot of people to handhold a film camera without getting shake in there and blurring your image just from you not being able to hold it perfectly still. You'll have to judge your own ability to do that. That's the downside of shutter speed. The downside of changing the aperture is you're changing your depth of field. So the more you open it up, the thinner that depth of field is, and the more important it is that you really nail your focus. Plus, it's going to change your thoughts on what you wanted to have in terms of having that background blur or foreground blur, the bokeh, if that's your thing. If that's your thing, you probably shoot wide open all the time anyways. But to step back from that, I mean, that's just a concern. You know, if you wanted to have a shot with everything in focus, you're going to be at an aperture of 16, if not higher. And once you start backing that down from 16 to 11 to 8, those are your two stops. Well, not as much is going to be in focus when you change your aperture. And it's just having an understanding of how that works and how that's going to affect the outcome of your photo. That's what's important when it comes to shooting low ISO films, and knowing how you can accomplish a properly exposed photo and what those things, those compromises you're going to make to do that, what they cause, and whether or not that's the effect that you want to have on your photograph. Show slow shutter speeds. Like if you're taking pictures of moving water, you get that slow shutter speed and the blurriness. I don't even want to call it blurriness, but you know, the motion of the water is captured differently than when you have that higher shutter speed where you get individual drops of water. That would be the example I would use for shutter speed. We've talked about bokeh for the changing of the aperture. In the end, it's all about getting a properly exposed photo. So for me, the first thing I do is I look at the camera that I want to shoot the film in, and I want to see what the lowest ISO I can take it down to. This is where some of the newer, or I should say the late model film, automatic film cameras really kind of shine and assist you with. And, you know, for instance, I have a Maxim 5 by Minolta, and it allows me to change the shutter speed, and I could take the shutter speed down to 6 ISO on that camera. So I put it in there, and then you know what? I let the camera tell me what the metering is. I can trust what the camera's going to do in terms of setting any auto exposure. If I decide to go auto exposure, I can trust the camera is going to be able to handle that, and it's going to be properly exposed. That's one method. That's one of the things about the newer or late model film cameras that allow you to do that. But if you've got a camera that's all manual, like say this Minolta XE7, it just requires that you kind of know how you're going to get there. How are you going to accomplish being able to shoot that low speed? Are you going to change your shutter speed? Are you going to change your aperture? Are you going to change both? You know, if you needed two stops and you're set at say 25, well then you could lower it to 12 on the camera. That's one of your stops. And if your original one was 4, you would just take and move your aperture ring to the 2.8, and there you go. Now you've compromised a little bit on your shutter speed. I mean, excuse me, you may have to still compromise on your shutter speed. You may be able to keep it the same. You know, it comes back to the whole exposure triangle, which if you haven't already, you really should teach yourself about the exposure triangle and about those three elements, shutter speed, aperture, and ISO, and how each of those affects the other, and how you can use differences and changes in one to alter the outcome on any of the others, and in the end give you the one thing that you're looking for, and that's a properly exposed photograph. So Matt, that's a lot of trouble to go through just to shoot some weird film that I can't even buy commercially. Why would you do it? Exactly. Why would you do it? Well, two reasons for me. Number one, I got the film super cheap, which means that, you know, I'm down to like 75 cents a roll for a roll of film, maybe a dollar roll. We'll just round it up. That's pretty cheap. Again, I'm king of cheap, or I should say inexpensive or frugal. You should be checking out the Frugal Photography Project. I probably even said that wrong, and I'm a part of it. But hey, that's just the way that it works in my mind. The Frugal Film Project is what it is. And you should check that out, where we've each got using inexpensively acquired cameras and film and processing and putting up some great works. We've got new displays every 3 or 4 days. You should really check it out. Frugal Film Project. And keep your eyes open for us on Instagram and elsewhere. Twitter. Look for it. Okay. So that's one reason, being frugal. The other reason, though, is you get an opportunity to use some of these films that are not necessarily available to consumers. And they're not available to consumers because of the testing required to make a consumer film and make something that's going to have a certain amount of forgiveness. But the other thing that you get when you start going into low ISO films is the grain on these really gets super fine. I touched on it before, but you know, the grain on some of these films is so fine, it's wonderfully smooth and silky. And if you're looking for something like that, you're not going to find it in Tri-X and HP5. Yeah, get down to your Delta 100s and you know, your T-Max 100s, you're going to get some decent grain. But even then, it's not as fine as what you're going to find on some of these super low ISO films, especially the ones that were initially made for X-ray and whatnot. Those are different types of films as well that you can possibly use. I came into some X-ray film, about 300 feet of this Agfa X-ray film used. It was basically used to make dental X-rays. And that stuff is fantastic. I'm almost out of it, and I'm going to hate to see it go. But just for fine, smooth grain, no matter what I developed it in, that to me is what really made me fall in love with shooting low ISO films. So again, don't back away from them. If you get a chance to get a low ISO film, go ahead. I know you can go over to Film Photography Project. They almost always have some sort of low ISO film in their 35 millimeter films. I'm just sort of looking here, see if I can find something just to point you to it as an example. Of course I can't, especially when you're looking for one, you can't. But yeah, just go over to the Film Photography Project's store and look for some of their stuff. I mean, they always have some really cool and off the beaten track types of films, and it's well worth your time just to check out and see what they've got. So with that, I'm going to tell you to get out there and find yourself some low ISO film and give it a shot. Don't be afraid of it. Don't think that you got to be running around and simply the brightest of bright days. Yeah, that may help, but you can use it in some pretty decent conditions. And as long as you know how to deal with your camera and you understand how you're going to go about getting your exposure, you really have to be in the moment and know your camera more than anything else. Once you've got that down and you know what you need to do to get your film exposed properly, then you can really start working with these low ISO films. With that, I'm going to let you go for the day. You folks have yourselves a wonderful day. Hope that it's nice and warm and bright and sunny where you're at. At least that it's the favorite conditions that you like to photograph. I hope that you're out there and doing that. Again, this is Matt Melcher, Box of Cameras Podcast. You can find me on Instagram, box_of_cameras, Box of Cameras. You can find me on Twitter with the same, Box of Cameras. You can also find me, Matt Melcher, on Flickr. I hope you folks have yourselves a great week. I hope you get a chance to get out there and take a lot of photos and get out there and share them as well. Tag me. Show me what you've been up to. I just can't wait to see it. Take care. Goodbye. Psych. Okay. Of course, I left something out. Well, that just means I don't have to do my social media stuff at the end again, because I always forget that part and I never remember what my names are in my social medias. I'm just that way. Okay, let's talk about developing this stuff, because that's a big part of it as well. Developing low ISO film has a certain amount of travails that you have to go through. Some of the commercial places, the dark room and whatnot, if you're working with them, you can let them know what it is that you've shot, the film type, any of the pertinent details. And you most and this is true of really most of your places that you're going to be working with. If you reach out to them prior to sending it to them and tell them, hey, this is what I've got. Can you help me? Can you develop this? Let them advise you on what they would do in terms of commercial developing. For some of them, they do it all the time. For others, they may be hesitant. And that's just the way that it is. Which points me to the next part, and that's developing your film at home, which is what I do. Again, I'm cheap, and that's just to me more fun, anyways. Still, developing some of these films at home is a little challenging, is what I'll say. Mainly because the film itself was never really tested for commercial home development using your standard commercial home developing chemicals. Like I said, this Kodak panchromatic separation film was originally meant to be developed in a solution known as D96. You really can't buy it. It's not the same as Cinestill's D96 monobath. Slightly different chemical makeup. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't develop this film in that. You absolutely can. I've developed it in monobath before, not Cinestills, but I'm assuming it would work the same way, and it worked just fine. You're not going to find it listed on Massive Development Chart as well. So really, you find your information on how to develop this film on Flickr. That's the best spot to go. Google your search for whatever type of film that you've got and add Flickr to that search so that you get into that, because there's tons of information there. And that's where I would point you to find your developing times. For instance, again, this particular film, I've developed it in D76, perfectly fine. I've developed it in HC110 dilution B, perfectly fine. Developed it. Wait, I've got a roll. I'm going to develop in Rodinal. I know of some people that have developed it in X-Tol at 12 minutes, perfectly fine. D76 was, I think, 9 minutes, 8 minutes, right in there. Bottom line is, you can really develop it in any black and white developer. What I would caution you with on developing this specific film is that it can get really contrasty. So keep that in mind. If you've got a film developer that enhances contrast, you might want to back off a little bit. The other thing is, the more agitation that you do tends to increase your contrast as well. So you might have to experiment, find the sweet spot for that time or agitation method. I'm actually going to be developing some of this film in D96. I'm going to be mixing up my own chemistry, similar to what I did with ECN. I'm also going to try some D23. Again, it's not a film developer that's available commercially. You have to mix it up yourself. And just off the top of my head, I'm thinking, boy, I bet this stuff would be great in Cafenol. Cafenol is really good with fine grain films. I bet that stuff would be great in there. Rodinal tends to show more grain. Like I said, that's going to be the next film, the next chemistry that I use, just to see. Bottom line is, I feel like I've got a film type that's available to me for relatively inexpensive. Yeah, I've got had to jump through a lot of hoops to get there, but it's relatively inexpensive. That is really a very fine film for many circumstances. And that's why I really like photography in general, and and film photography specifically, I like to jump through the hoops. I like to figure things out. You know, I'm not the guy that just, if you hand me the roll of film and say, shoot it exactly like this, by about the fourth frame, I'm like, well, you know what? What would happen if I try this? Leads to a lot of failures, but it also leads me to some fun successes as well. You know, if you listen to the last episode, I was down talking about failures, and I'm not in that mode anymore. Right now, I'm just looking to have some more fun here as the sun comes up a little bit higher in the sky every single day and it gets a little bit warmer. So now I think I'm done. Film developing. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I guess I should talk one more thing. You know, there's a lot of different types of film. I kind of touched on it before. Yeah, you can go to FPP and look at their store. But, you know, look at things like X-ray films, microfilm. You know, you can still find film that's made for microfiche, you know, that they use for duplicating things. I've been shooting some of that lately. Again, super low ISO, can get contrasty, but you can really use it. You can look at that. And I've also got some old expired black and white film from Kodak, which is technically known as Single X. It expired in 1970. It was originally rated at 64. So if you do the math, it's pretty much a 6 ISO film. Got a lot of that. I mean, look for the weird X-ray films, expired films, cinema films, motion picture films, and seek some of those out. Don't be afraid to try them anyway. Somebody said, hey, have you ever heard of this? Hey, let me, you want to trade for this, that, or the other thing? Say, yeah, you can find yourself some great films, some stuff that is truly amazing. So with that, now I think I'm going to let you go. Folks, have a great week. Take care.